Brilliance Audio. Half in Shadow by Gemma Liviero. Performed by Sarah Naughton and Alex Windham. London, 1938. Prologue. Eleanor. My father was executed for the crime of desertion. This is declared in a letter from the War Office and confirmed by an office bearer at the bottom. Unapologetic and seemingly supportive, with a signature that is bold and decisive, and overbearingly underlined. This record, that my mother keeps in a box in her bottom drawer, hidden beneath other papers, is one of the few links I have to Arthur Shine. This year I turned 23. I was 6 years old when I first learned his name. The gulf between those two events had been sparsely filled with assumptions about my absent father. The answers my mother gave me were vague and short, but as children, and sometimes as adults, we accept the simple explanations we hear from those we trust. Though there were things unsaid that suggested my father wasn't welcome in our house, even in death. There are no photographs of Arthur on display. I have been to the houses of others who lost their fathers, brothers, and sons in the Great War, and all of them were enshrined in some way, in display cases, on mantel shelves, enlarged and featured in entranceways, sometimes with medals, certificates, and war memorabilia. A helmet, a final letter framed, a woolen coat lovingly preserved, a spoil from battle, or bottled foreign soil. From what I gleaned, my father's desertion had led to the death and massacre of many of his own men in France in the autumn of 1915. The description I have of his crime and service is lacking, along with other details of his life that might allow one to draw their own conclusions or understanding. One crime in isolation seems a most extraordinary, if not terrible, thing. But what of the pieces that make up the whole? What of the life that came before? What happened to his parents? I asked many years earlier, when my mother, Harriet, was tending the rose beds that lined the sunny terrace, her golden strands of hair, in amongst the white, shining brilliantly in the sun. "Whose?" she asked. "My father's." She stopped digging and turned to look up at me, eyebrows raised, seemingly stunned by the question at first. "I never knew them," she said, her expression then fixed and pleasant and paper-thin, a veneer to hide a pain I had not considered until then. Though her life began with wealth and privilege, the latter years had not been as kind to my mother. "They died before I met your father," she said, turning back to the blooms and clipping needlessly at foliage that had already been trimmed. "I know that already, Mum," I said. "He comes from a line of miners, an only child." She paused. "There isn't really much else," she said, ending further intrusion to a period of her life she had closed the door to. I was 14 at the time, and it wasn't that I particularly wanted to know at all. It was that others had started to ask me about my missing parent. Curious adults, teachers, friends, always about fathers, where they were born. The titles of men seemed more significant to some. The rest of the conversation I've forgotten because, like everything with my mother, any further querying would not have led me far. However, I do remember her gloves blackened with soil, as she then proceeded to dig with her trowel more fiercely, and realizing that I had driven her to memories she had no desire to revisit. Halfway through the war, my mother's comfortable circumstances left her when my grandfather's British textiles were no longer productive or competitive with those from American businesses, and his country
Sample complete. Ready to continue?